From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Carol Bousquet with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, February 26th, 2025.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi is threatening to sue Maine for refusing to comply with President Trump's executive order banning transgender athletes from competing on girls' sports teams. As Steve Misler reports, the threat is part of a larger effort to compel the state to obey his edict.
Maine is among at least three other states to be, quote, put on notice by Bondi, a longtime ally of Trump who was recently confirmed by the U.S. Senate, despite concerns that she would use her position to carry out the president's political agenda. California and Minnesota also received a litigation threat. All three states have argued that complying with Trump's order would violate their respective laws. In Maine, that law is the Human Rights Act, which was updated in 2021 to add gender identity protections. The letter follows two other investigations launched by the Trump administration, which stem from last week's confrontation between the president and Governor Janet Mills over the issue. The president has vowed to withhold Maine's share of federal funding until it complies. Maine Attorney General Aaron Fry has said that carrying out that threat will be illegal, and his office will fight it. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Misler.
The Maine House voted Tuesday to censure a Republican lawmaker over political social media posts that identified a transgender high school athlete. But as Kevin Miller reports, the vote fell along party lines, and the lawmaker is refusing to apologize.
The censure resolution accuses Representative Laurel Libby of, quote, reprehensible actions, and of trying to advance her political agenda by posing pictures and the name of a high schooler who is transgender. Libby used the Facebook post to criticize Maine schools for not complying with President Trump's recent executive order banning transgender athletes from girls' and women's sports. The post went viral and eventually caught the attention of Trump, whose administration launched three investigations into the state. But Democrats accused Libby of endangering the welfare of a minor.
The representative from Auburn's actions have directly harmed the school, the families, and our children in my community.
Representative Christina Mitchell is a Democrat from Cumberland, whose district includes the high school that the student attends. Mitchell says parents are on edge, and that students are disturbed by the presence of national media trucks and the number of police around their school this week.
And it's all happening because one person, an adult, a legislator, chose to use a child to score political points.
Representative Matt Moonen of Portland, who serves as a Democratic majority leader, pointed out that Libby was asked to take down the Facebook post after hateful and threatening comments were directed at the student. Libby has refused to remove the post.
Instead, she continued to bring national media attention to the student, callously disregarding the threats of harm and the serious concerns for their safety and well-being. These actions have made it unequivocally clear that the representative from Auburn, Representative Libby, has violated the legislative code of ethics.
But Republican lawmakers warned Democrats against censuring Libby for disagreeing with her politics. While several Republicans strongly criticized Libby for the Facebook post, they pointed out that the three other censures in House history were all in response to things the lawmakers did inside the statehouse. Representative Billy Bob Falkingham, the Republican leader in the House, pointed out that the legislature's code of ethics do not have any guidelines for social media posts.
And think about the standard that this sets for the future of this legislature, and it's a path that we don't want to go down, Mr. Speaker.
After the 75-70 vote, House Speaker Ryan Fecteau called Libby to the center of the House chamber and read a formal rebuke to her. He then offered her time to craft an apology to the full House, but she immediately declined. As a result, Libby will not be allowed to speak or vote on the House floor. Libby remained defiant while speaking with reporters outside of the House chamber.
It's pretty clear that when the woke left doesn't like what you have to say, doesn't like the truth, that they will silence you, that they will cancel you. Maine girls have no defense
Tuesday night's censure vote was the latest flashpoint in a roughly week-old controversy. Several days after Libby's post went viral, Trump pressed Governor Janet Mills on the issue during a luncheon with other governors. Mills said that Maine was following state and federal law, but Trump responded by threatening to withhold federal funding from Maine. Mills, in return, responded with a comment that has since gone viral in Democratic and progressive circles. See you in court. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
Maine Governor Janet Mills' confrontation with President Donald Trump garnered national attention last week. During a White House event, Trump warned Mills that Maine would lose federal funding if she didn't comply with his executive order banning transgender athletes. Mills responded that she's complying with state and federal law and would see him in court. But how do state and federal laws actually protect transgender athletes? Patty White has this report.
The protections for transgender people under Maine's Human Rights Act are clear, says Kit Thompson Crossman.
It's been 20 years that we've been protecting on the basis of gender identity. It's not new. It's not radical.
Thompson Crossman is executive director of the Maine Human Rights Commission. She says gender identity was first defined in state regulations in 2005 and codified in statute 4 years ago, joining other protected classes such as sex, sexual orientation, disability, race, color, and religion. And she says the law specifically says that denying a person equal opportunity in athletic programs is education discrimination.
So the Maine Human Rights Act protects trans students in the same way it protects all other students. They have to have equal opportunity in their school athletic programs. Not special treatment, just equal access to participate if they want to.
To align with state law, the Maine Principals Association updated its policy last year to allow students to participate in sports based on the gender they identify with. Thompson Crossman says Maine's law on the issue is solid, though she acknowledges there are disputes about federal law, specifically Title IX.
We are right now expecting schools to comply with the Maine Human Rights Act, and I think that's going to put them in conflict with Title IX, and that's going to be something I'm sure we're going to be working out for a while.
Title IX prohibits sex-based discrimination in schools and programs that receive federal funding. President Trump cited the 53-year-old law when he issued his executive order, arguing that allowing transgender female athletes to compete denies equal opportunity for women and girls.
We can sniff out discrimination where it exists. And that executive order smells really bad to me.
Jennifer Drobak is professor of law emerita at Indiana University. Drobak says she believes there's no question that Title IX protects transgender athletes because the definition of sex has evolved and expanded to include gender identity.
What happens to Title IX is every time there's a new administration, they either try to undo or reinterpret what the law is according to their own political perspectives, which is their prerogative. And then it's up to the courts to decide what the law actually says.
In 2016, the Obama administration issued guidance that clarified that Title IX protects students who are transgender. A year later, the Trump administration rescinded that guidance. Then the Biden administration issued rules in 2024 that affirmed protections for transgender students. A federal judge in Kentucky struck down those rules in January, and President Trump issued his executive order a month later.
I think what some would say is nobody is denying trans students the right to play sports in general, just women's sports.
Aaron Bazouvis is a professor and associate dean at Western New England University School of Law.
But it's not the right to play sports in general. It's the right to play sports in a way that affirms your gender identity, because cisgender students have that right.
Bazouvis says, with the exception of the Trump administration's interpretations of Title IX, the law's arc has consistently moved in the direction of inclusion.
I don't know that it's necessarily a weakness of Title IX, but a weakness of society that we are somehow carving out trans students and saying other people can find protection when it comes to discrimination on the basis of sex under the statute, but these students can't.
This is just a flat out power play.
Ellen Starowski is a professor in sports media at Ithaca College who has spent her career studying Title IX. She says, at its core, the law is a mandate for educators to support all students to fulfill their promise as humans.
I'm 100% sure that that was not the original intention of Title IX or any other civil rights law, to use it as a weapon against the most vulnerable.
But the law will likely be tested, both in the courts and in Congress. Republican lawmakers have introduced bills in the U.S. House and Senate that would make it a violation of Title IX to allow transgender female athletes to compete on girls' and women's school sports teams. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Governor Janet Mills is nominating Maine's former lead lobster biologist to be the state's top fisheries regulator. Nicole Grisco has more.
Carl Wilson has worked at the Maine Department of Marine Resources for 26 years, first leading the state's lobster research and monitoring programs. He currently leads the Bureau of Marine Science, which recently launched a new program dedicated to the study of right whales in the Gulf of Maine. Wilson will replace Pat Kelleher, who announced that he'll retire from the department in mid-March following high-profile tensions with the state's lobster industry. In a statement, Wilson said there are many challenges ahead of the state's marine resource industries and that he remains committed to confronting them. The Maine Lobstermen's Association referred to Wilson as a, quote, rare leader in government who respects fishermen as professionals. Wilson must first appear before the legislature's Marine Resources Committee, and his nomination is subject to a vote in the Maine Senate. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nicole Ogrisco.
A legislative committee held a public hearing Wednesday on three bills aimed at accounting for and disposing of the firefighting foam containing toxic PFAS or forever chemicals. Molly Enking reports.
Maine experienced its largest PFAS foam disaster in the state's history this past August, when a hangar at the former Naval Air Base in Brunswick released 1,450 gallons of triple F foam into the surrounding environment. Now, three bills are aimed at addressing PFAS foam. One bill specifically prohibits the use of the foam at the former Brunswick Naval Air Station. Proponents for the bill say this disaster, the sixth worst PFAS spill in the country, could easily happen again if action isn't taken. Jennifer Hicks is a resident of Brunswick and a member of the town council.
Unfortunately, the owner of the airport, Mira, still has thousands of gallons of AFFF in its other two hangars. And so Brunswick is still not safe. In fact, a spill from Hangar 6 would drain into the town of Brunswick's main aquifer and shut down its public drinking water supply.
Hicks says that for days after the spill, the foam seeped out of manholes, floated in the air, and filled stormwater retention ponds in Brunswick. She says residents are still seeing high levels of PFAS in well water and soil. If passed, one of the bills would require statewide inventory of all existing toxic firefighting foam and would implement a collection and disposal program to be in place by 2027. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly Enking.
And that's today's news. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join Irwin Gratz tomorrow morning at 5 for Morning Edition. I'm Carol Bousquet. Thanks for listening.